morning. It's a nice cold morning. I see you wore your heavy coats. The court calls United States v. Jansen. Counsel for the appellant, please.
Chief Judge Baker, members of this honorable court.
A little louder, please.
Yes.
Thank you.
I'm Captain Jeff Davis.
Can you hear in the back? You're getting nods, so you're in good shape. Okay.
I'm Colonel Patrick Wells. We represent the appellant, Senior Airman David Jansen. May it please the court. Senior Airman Jansen was entitled to have his case reviewed by a properly appointed panel of the United States Court of Appeals for the Air Force. In this case, he did not, because a civilian judge, Mr. Soybull, was not properly appointed in accordance with the acceptance clause of the Appointments Clause of the United States Constitution. The Secretary of the Air Force signed a letter purporting to appoint Judge Soybull to the Air Force Court of Appeals, citing 5 U.S.C. 3101. And that statute essentially says that all of the department heads of the executive agencies and a lot of other folks.
Secretary of the Air Force, Secretary of Defense.
I'm sorry. Correct, Your Honor. Secretary of Defense.
Okay.
May employ the employees that Congress appropriates from year to year. And that's what he cited as his authority for that appointment.
Could I just ask you, how should a civilian judge have been appointed? You're going to tell us why this was not the correct method, but I'm just intrigued to know what is the correct method in the view of appellant.
The method itself wouldn't be problematic. What I think has been established between this court and the Supreme Court is that judges on the appellate courts of all the Army, the Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, Air Force are inferior officers, and they must be appointed in accordance with the accepting clause of the Constitution. And that would allow...
No, I get that part. Walk through the mechanics.
Yes, Your Honor. That would allow a department head, which would be the Secretary of Defense, to appoint Judge Soybull or anyone else for that matter, if Congress has granted him or her, whoever Secretary of Defense is, appointment authority in accordance with the Constitution. And so essentially the question before the court is really, honestly, the narrow question is, what does the word employ mean? And does that word employ mean appoint? Because that's the statute that the Secretary signed as his authority for the appointment.
So you're saying there's no problem with the department head doing it if you have a 323A type statute or that the new DHS statute?
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely.
So what's missing here is something that's more specific. Could a general enabling authority do it?
I don't think so. I think that would be very problematic for a number of reasons. First, when we look at these cases that we have between this court and the Supreme Court, they talk at length about the very importance of the appointment clause and the role it plays in our Constitution and how the whole point of limiting the appointments clause is to keep the balance of power, particularly with the president. And so for the court to take generic language that on its plain meaning and its plain face doesn't mean a point and doesn't suggest a point, and then to say, well, we sort of think that's good enough, then you're on a slippery slope, and essentially everyone in the federal government ends up with appointment power on any word that maybe possibly could be understood to mean appointment.
What was Colin?
Please. Judge Ryan had a question, then over to Judge Shuki.
And maybe I missed your answer to Judge Baker's question, but who right now could appoint Judge Soybull to the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals, properly appoint?
At this point, I believe it would be limited to the president because no statute has been presented which has shown that Congress has delegated that authority to a department head. So I believe that is what it's limited to at this point. And the assumption is that the government, in doing this, did its due diligence and looked for every possible statute that they thought of that would have granted the Secretary of Defense this authority. I can't say that I looked at every single statute that applies to the Secretary of Defense, and I've confirmed that there's absolutely nothing out there. I'm working with what's been presented in front of us and what the Secretary of Defense...
But you would say then it does not include within... it would not include Title X's enabling authorities for the Secretary of Defense?
No, Your Honor. And one of the things I would point at is... I take it Your Honor is talking about 10 U.S.C., I think it's Section 113.
Yes.
Yes, sir. Okay. I would submit that...
Which I understand is not cited in the SecDef's memo, but I'm asking you the broader question is, how does one do this if not the way that it was done?
Sure, yes. Obviously, I think the court knows the answer I'm always going to be coming back to is Congress has clearly established how they how they are going to do it, as they did for the Secretary of Transportation. And they granted him the authority just directly. And the Supreme Court and this court said numerous times the reason that he has the appointment authority is because Congress expressly gave it to him. And that's the word that was used on numerous times, is it was expressly given to him.
If it was expressly given to him in the DOT statute, and then when they hacked what they hacked off, including Coast Guard, and made it part of Homeland Security, why did Congress feel it necessary to have a very specific CCA statute if the DOT statute was okay?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I'm following entirely.
Okay. The DOT statute got constitutional blessing by the Supreme Court back when the Coast Guard was still part of the Transportation Department.
Yes, Your Honor.
Then Congress hacked the Coast Guard and a bunch of other stuff off and threw it in Homeland Security. And eventually, in Homeland Security, they gave the Secretary very specific, explicit authority to appoint civilian CCA judges in a recent statute. Now, why was that necessary?
I don't know if it's necessary, and I don't know if this is...
Is it a belt and suspenders thing?
I'm not honestly sure about that. I mean, there's a couple things we could consider. Obviously, the Coast Guard has been the one involved in all the litigation of these cases almost exclusively. And so one answer just might be the Coast Guard was sort of more aware of it and asked specifically for the authority. And it looks like in the statutory history of Article 66, when you read the Weiss case and they talk about it, it was actually the Coast Guard that specifically went to Congress in the enactment of Article 66 and said, hey, we would like you to include language of not just officers, but civilians as well.
Okay. What was Congress thinking when it enacted the original article in 50? They said you can have civilians. They made no provision whatsoever for appointing them. The original statute, really like the present statute, says that the judge advocate general shall, I think the original statute said, shall constitute boards of review. And basically that's what you've got today. Of course, the terminology's changed, but it's still the entity's a creature of the TJAG. But the appointments are something else. So what do you think Congress was talking about in 1950 when they did this, or didn't they think about it?
Well, I mean, my understanding, if I understand Your Honor's question, is I'm taking the statutory history from the Weiss case, was they didn't intend to do it in the first place of saying civilians in 66, and the Coast Guard specifically asked them, and they said, okay, we'll throw it in there, and I don't think they thought about, okay, is this an inferior officer, a principal officer? How are they going to report it? They're just like, oh, the Coast Guard's asking, we'll give it to you. Here you go.
Okay. So
I think that's likely what happened because Congress never
they didn't think
the
about
first
it.
Class.
Okay.
That's just how it ended up.
Counsel, who has the burden in this case? Do you have the burden of proving that the Secretary of Defense's actions were unconstitutional, or does the government have the burden of showing that the Secretary's actions were constitutional?
Very good question, Your Honor. I would take the position that the government has the burden of showing that what they've done meets the requirements of the law. I don't have anything in my fingertips to cite that. But they're the ones that appointed the civilian, and they're the ones claiming that the Secretary of Defense had the authority to do it. So I believe they would carry the burden of showing that that's the case, but I don't have any authority to cite for Your Honor. One of the things I would like to speak about with regard specifically to 5 U.S.C. 3101, which is what the Secretary of Defense decided to give authority is, on its face, when you look at all the definitions of that statute, 2104 and 2105, that statute applies first and foremost to every head of the department of the 15 executive cabinet level agencies. So Department of Transportation, Homeland Security, Commerce, Interior, Agriculture, etc. And then it also applies to the military departments, the Air Force, the Navy, and the Army.
So who are not heads of departments.
Exactly. But on its face.
So it's broader. So the officer definition in 2104 is broader than the constitutional definition.
Yes, Your Honor.
So where does that leave us when you're talking about officers who aren't constitutional inferior officers? Which way does that cut?
I think where it leaves us is the only thing that makes that a problem is if 3101 grants appointment. Because if it doesn't, it just means what the plain language means, which is this is an employment appropriation statute that just says, hey, every time we give you a certain number of employees, all the different agencies can use them. I don't think that makes it a problem because it doesn't grant appointment authority. The point is, though, if the court's going to find that 3101 does grant appointment authority to the Secretary of Defense, then on its face it grants it to everybody else that's listed in that statute.
Well, but what does 2104 do? 2104 purports to grant some sort of appointment authority, and then the government conflates the two.
I would disagree with Your Honor slightly on that. I don't think 2104
grants... It defines an officer as someone appointed by the constitutional appointment powers of inferior officers plus the secretaries of military departments who aren't Article II since 1947, aren't Article II authorities. So where does that leave us?
I agree with Your Honor on that point. I would say that there is a question of whether that statute itself defining an officer has exceeded the scope of the Constitution. But even in and of itself, that statute...
Or it's talking about a different sort of officer from a constitutional officer. I don't know.
I mean, it seems hard to say that because when you look at how that's defined, it just follows the plain language of the Constitution, the accepting clause, and then it just adds at the end military departments.
How do you deal with the Willie line of cases?
Yes, Your Honor. Looking at Willie, it's a little bit confusing. You say a lot of cases, so when I looked at Willie, I looked back to, I think it's the Ninth Circuit that Willie cites as its authority, and when I look at that case, it really doesn't have anything to do with appointment of power. It has to do with delegation of authority. And appellant has no issue with that, and appellant would agree with that Ninth Circuit case, because every statute under the department heads does say that they may, in fact, delegate their authority. I believe even the one from the Secretary of Defense says that. But that has really nothing at all to do with appointment power. Now, I agree that Willie does then start talking about appointment power. And its claim is that 5 U.S.C. 301, along with the Reorganization Act of the government, is sufficient to grant the Secretary of Labor authority to appoint labor law judges. And essentially, at least to the extent that, you know, what's interesting is they cite 301, but then after citing it, they actually quote from the Reorganization Act. And they seem to be hanging their hat on the authority that's granted in the Reorganization Act. So I don't know how much they're getting from 301 as granting the actual authority. And it says, the Reorganization of Labor states that the Secretary of Labor may from time to time make such provisions as he shall deem appropriate, authorizing the performance of any other officer or any agency, et cetera, et cetera. And so they're citing 301, but they're also citing the Reorganization Act and what I would submit is...
And the more general language then is just dicta that you would choose not to apply?
Yeah, and I think the best argument for that is when you look at going back to the Secretary of the Treasury and the Transportation, the language from 301 is essentially verbatim from 49 U.S.C. 322. 49 U.S.C. 322 states that the Secretary of the Treasury may, I'll just read straight from it so that I'm not confusing it. The Secretary of the Transportation may prescribe regulations to carry out the duties and powers of the Secretary. That's exactly what 301 says. It just applies to everybody, not just Secretary of Transportation. But the Congress didn't think that that language meant an appointment power. That's why under the very next statute, 323, they then grant the appointment power. So to suggest that the language used in 301 means appointment power isn't really consistent with what Congress did under 322 and 323, and they put the statutes right next to each other. So if the language in 301 grants appointment power, then Congress had no reason to grant appointment power to the Secretary of Transportation, because that's what 322 already says. And the answer, of course, is appellants claim that that's just not the case. That generic language saying they may prescribe regulations to carry out their duties and powers is very generic. It applies to every department head and probably every agency head in the federal government, and it doesn't grant appointment power, and that's the whole reason why in the very next statute, 323, Congress granted the appointment power. And again, what it goes back to, and I think the Supreme Court has said this a number of times as well as this Court, is we're just going to take these statutes on their plain meaning. And they sort of mean what they mean. And if Congress wants to give up appointment power, they need to give this Court and the Supreme Court some pretty good direction that that's really what they clearly intended to do. And in this case, I don't think 3101 does that. A, because I don't think the word employee on its plain meaning and face means appointment. specifically when in this statute itself, Congress defined and explained what appointment was, and then they used a different word in the statute and used employed. 301 doesn't get you there either, because if one applies to everybody almost in the whole entire federal government, and all it says is just generically, you may prescribe regulations to carry out the business of your office, but it doesn't grant appointment power authority. My time is pretty much expired.
Counsel, I'd like to ask you a question. It's agreed by everyone that the reason why military officers can serve on the CCA is that they previously have been appointed by the President, confirmed by the Senate.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, with Mr. Soible, he was a retired military officer.
Yes, Your Honor.
So he previously had been appointed by the President after confirmation by the Senate. Now, he had not resigned his commission. In fact, if he had been recalled to active duty, there would not be required any additional action by the President.
Yes, Your Honor.
So could the government persuasively argue that, in fact, Mr. Soible was in virtually the same shoes as a military officer based on that prior appointment?
Your Honor, that was expressly addressed in U.S. v. Carpenter, 37 MJ 291, and that was exactly the argument that the government made in that case, because, interestingly, factually, this case is almost exactly the same as the Coast Guard cases. Mr. Soible is a retired officer. He was, in fact, sat on the Court of Appeals for the Air Force, previously on active duty, then he retired, became a civilian employee, and got assigned over there. So he looks exactly like the same chief officer in the Coast Guard case, and the government made that very same argument. And this court in the Supreme Court said that that's not sufficient. And the reason is because when he's serving in his civilian capacity, he's not performing any duties germane to his office as an officer. So he's not performing that. He could have been, in fact, recalled to active duty, as you said, and that would have been perfectly fine. And then he would have been serving in his capacity as he'd been appointed by the President. But as a civilian, he hasn't been appointed by the President, and he's not performing any duties in that nature. So no, Your Honor, and I do think the Carpenter case addresses that.
But you don't disagree that if he'd been recalled to active duty, that he could have been appointed to the court?
Absolutely, Your Honor. If he'd been recalled to active duty, there would be no issues here. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel of the government.
Good morning, Chief Baker, honorable judges of the court. May it please the court, I'm Major Daniel Breen, and along with Lieutenant Colonel Taylor Smith, it is our pleasure to represent the United States in this matter. In response to the specified issue, it's the government's position that Article 66 UCMJ mandated the establishment of service courts of criminal appeals and permitted the service of civilian judges, that Congress, through Titles 5 and 10 of the U.S. Code, authorizes the Secretary of Defense to appoint inferior officers. In this case,
well, hang on just for 1 second, though. The memo that the SecDef signed does not cite the Title 10. It purports to cite only to Title 5, Section 3101 at Sec.
Yes, Your Honor.
So you're here arguing a different authority?
Well, under Title 10, he has the authority to direct and have direction and control over the Department of Defense through 10 U.S.C. 1 through 13. In that capacity, he is just utilizing 5 U.S.C. 3101 to make the appointment. So I don't think he's abrogating.
Has the appointment been made pursuant to Title 10 or pursuant to Title 5? In the government's view?
In the government's view, it's pursuant to his power under Title 10, utilizing the...
So when he said pursuant to my authority under Title 5, he really meant under Title 10?
I think he meant both. I think if he didn't have the Title 10 power, he wouldn't have been able to use...
Just couldn't get up to 10. That's the higher number. And I mean, come on. This is pursuant to my authority under Title 5.
What I'm meaning to express is due to the authority that he has under Title 10, it enables him to make appointments under...
Under Title 5. Okay. So ultimately it falls back on Title 5.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you speak on behalf of the United States?
I believe I...
Okay, no, it's not a trick question. Can we have the confidence that you speak on behalf of the Department of Defense, and you're here representing the views of the Department of Defense? Do you follow? Sometimes there's a complexity when you're, I understand, it's not a trick question. You represent the United States. That's that side of the room. But can we operate with the confidence that you are representing, in fact, the views of the Department of Defense in this case involving the Secretary of Defense's authority?
I believe through my appointment as an officer of the delegation to the assignment.
Would you like to?
Let me ask you the question a slightly different way, and if you feel you can't answer for reasons of work product or attorney-client ethic or whatever, feel free to say so. Have you consulted with anyone at the General Counsel's office at the Department of Defense about the position you're taking in this case?
No, ma'am, I have not.
Okay, if 113, which gives the Secretary authority, direction, control over the Department, is a general grant of authority to appoint officers, then why does Congress, in Chapter 4 of Title 10, where it sets out the members, the officers who constitute the Office of the Secretary of Defense, take great care to set out who appoints each one, and in particular in 139A, 139BA, 139BB, and 144, four officers who are appointed by the Secretary alone. It says so. If the Secretary has general appointment authority under 113 hooking into Title 5, why is this necessary?
Your Honor, I believe it's necessary when Congress is creating those positions. It's not as necessary to put like a civilian judge in the same place because under Article 66, that's how the
Congress created those positions.
Yes, that's how Congress created those positions.
And Congress said nothing about the authority to appoint them. It said the TJAGs constitute them, but it says nothing about appointments to them.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So where does that leave us?
I think that leaves us in determining what authority then outside of any express grant could be present.
Well, you haven't answered my question as to why an express grant is necessary if the Secretary has a general statutory appointing power.
Well, an express grant wouldn't be necessary for positions that have already been created by Congress or authority that's already been given by Congress.
There's a rule of interpretation that says that the inclusion of one means the exclusion of others. And I don't know Latin, so I won't say the Latin version of that. It's confusing enough in English. If you're relying on 3101 at SEC, and 3105 expressly provides for the appointment of administrative law judges, why isn't that an argument that says, well, Congress has expressly provided for the appointment of judges, and yet you're reading 3101 is sort of generally giving you that authority anyway over any other judges you might wish. So they've decided we specifically give you the authority to appoint administrative law judges. But, oh, by the way, feel free to interpret this to appoint any other judges you might wish to appoint.
Well, I think that the distinction there is any other judges you'd wish to appoint. I think through 3105, it references administrative law judges, so it sets forth that position as existing, just as the fact that Article 66 has the appellate judges, they exist. I think a good example of this is, if the Secretary of Defense on his own wanted to create a brand new level of appellate court at each of the services, and put them, and now we had circuit service courts of criminal review below the Air Force Court, there would be no authority from Congress to have that position. So therefore, there would be no ability to use any general authority to appoint officers to create that position. And I think that's kind of where you get into when you look at the, as you refer to it, Your Honor, as the Willie line of cases. The Secretary of Labor had authority to decide to investigate and have rulings in terms of these Whistleblower Act violations. However, due to general authority, he just created judges and he created the rules of the court and he created the courts itself. And the reason why he was able to do that was because the general authority that was given to him through 5 U.S.C. 301 and the Reorganization Act. So even though they hadn't conceptualized the actual judges or the court themselves, in that situation, since the authority was already there, he was able to take the next step and make the appointments.
Can the does the secretary have the authority under 113 to create portfolios, Assistant Secretary of Defense portfolios, beyond the 14 established in law and appoint them himself?
If it was someone who was going to act as an inferior officer,
and they're all inferior because he's above them.
Right.
By definition, all ASDs are inferior, aren't they?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So if he thinks there ought to be, the statute says there will be 14 assistant secretaries of defense, and it sets out about what half of them are going to do. If he decides that 14 is not enough and he wants to appoint two more and make them the Assistant Secretary of Defense for puppies and kitties, or you know, whatever.
Yes, Your Honor.
By his own power under 113, can he do that?
He could only do it if somehow he was granted some authority over puppies and kittens in that instance.
Okay, well, what about breast cancer? DOD's been laying out X million a year for breast cancer. Does he have authority to appoint an assistant secretary for breast cancer?
If he is granted that authority by Congress,
wait a minute. Now you're talking past yourself because said in 113 he has general appointing authority to appoint officers. And what I'm trying to get at is how far does that go? Can he appoint an assistant secretary of defense? Can he create an ASD position and put somebody in there by virtue of his power under 113?
If it is within his lane under 113.
Okay, if it's within, well, he has authority, direction, and control over the Department of Defense, which you act like is enough. Can he or can't he? Leave puppies and kitties out of it. You know, it's something military. Whatever.
Okay, just for example.
For smartphones and DOD because they're a big deal.
Okay, and there was enabling legislation for Congress related.
No. Okay. No enabling legislation other than 113.
Okay. Well, if under 113, if it's something that he's in charge of, that, and I'm sorry to keep going back to it because I just want to just make sure I'm saying that he has the authority.
Yeah, let's posit that it's within the Department of Defense.
Then he would be able to have inferior officers carry out those activities.
He can create by regulation an Assistant Secretary of Defense position and appoint somebody to it.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Can you cite two examples of other inferior officers that the Secretary of Defense has appointed pursuant to 3101?
I cannot, Your Honor.
Does that mean there are no such officers, or you just have not been able to locate them? I mean, is that unknown answer or known answer and there are none?
It's an unknown answer, Your Honor.
Did you look?
Yes, I did.
Counsel, may I ask the same question I asked of the appellant? Who bears the burden here?
Well, Your Honor, since this is de novo review, essentially it's just whether your interpretation of the law is that the appointment is proper. So in terms of kind of the adversarial setting, the burden is kind of on me since I'm proposing that the appointment was valid.
Well, would you agree that in light of Supreme Court's holding in Buckley that the Appointments Clause is a significant structural safeguard of the constitutional scheme, that you have a rather high burden here?
Well, Your Honor, I don't necessarily believe that it's a very high burden. It would just be a matter of whether the statutes provide that authority or not. In this instance, since there's no facts to apply, I don't think the burden aspect of it is that high. It's just a matter of whether consistent with Willie and with the sequence of Title V code in conformity with his Title X authority, whether he can make the appointment or not.
Is it too much for this court to seek an express authorization by Congress?
There would be nothing wrong with seeking express authorization.
But I'm saying, should we require that there be a showing by the government that there was express authorization by Congress?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe so. I want to refer to the Edmund case, because in the Edmund case, which goes through 49 U.S.C. 323A, that was a general statute also, because it made no mention of appellate court judges. It just said all.
But wasn't Edmund different? Wasn't Edmund really saying that there needn't be specification of the precise positions as compared to saying, as you seem to be saying now, there needn't be that express authorization to create those inferior officers to begin with?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So elaborate on that for me, please.
Okay, well, since essentially what it boils down to then is whether they have, since in Edmund you have the authority to appoint officers, and it's a broad definition of officers in that instance, it keeps drawing me back to the Willie cases, and I bombarded the court with the word authority earlier, but it's just, is the authority there? And that was one of the things that really struck me with the Department of Labor and the Secretary, that he was given this authority by Congress. Congress didn't tell him he could create other courts, didn't tell him he could hire other officers to do these hearings, but the the cases interpreting that designation of the court and his hiring of judges all found that it was permissible.
Are the statutes parallel in DOL and DOD?
They are not.
Okay, well then what's the relevance of Willie?
Well,
this is a statutory question. The question is, as I understand, does the Secretary of Defense by statute have the authority to exercise the power of a head of department under Article 2? If the statutes aren't parallel, then I don't see what weight Willie has.
Well, Your Honor, the statutes in terms of, I apologize if I misspoke, the titles that cover the departments are different, but in Willie, they cited 5 U.S.C. 301 along with reorganization.
Well, I'm talking about I'm really more interested in whether Congress in its establishing the Department of Labor by statute went to the same extent that it did in establishing the Department of Defense with very precise, explicit statutory requirements for particular sub-cabinet officers and their appointment, or do you know?
Your Honor, I do not know, and that was not addressed in those Department of Labor cases.
Thank you.
They merely held the generic ability to hire.
Okay.
But to follow up on what Judge Stuckey is saying, in the Willie case, the statute said that the Secretary of Labor may authorize the performance by any other officer, any function of the Secretary.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that essentially say, fairly directly, may create inferior officers? And is there an analog in the defense side of the House here?
There's not a direct analog, except to go back to Title V.
But doesn't that go to Judge Stuckey's point that, why are you pointing to Willie? How does that really help your case?
Well, I feel it really helps our case because not only there was not even a conception of the court itself or of the judge. We have that with Article 66. One of the other things that we have with Title V, and one of the things I wanted to discuss is the...
Which way does that cut? Wouldn't it be logical to say that if it's just a nebulous nothing out there, that maybe he can do more by regulation than he can if it's a statutory office?
Well, it would seem odd that he's able to do more by regulation than he can by statute, but in this situation...
Not if Congress takes the tack of setting out explicitly in numerous statutes who can do the appointing.
In terms of the Willie case, they didn't do that, though.
They didn't do that, but they did in DOD.
And, Your Honor, in those situations, the point that I would take with that is what when they created those positions. They created specific positions, and they created specific authority based upon those positions, and Congress does that with many of the departments in who they set up.
Counsel, I don't mean to be obtuse, but can you explain to me specifically how you think Article 66 helps you with respect to the Secretary of Defense having appointment power in this case?
I think it helps us in terms of, at least in that situation, Congress has conceptualized the court as well as.
But it doesn't talk about the Secretary of Defense. It talks about the TJAG.
It talks about, right, how the TJAG will set it up, but at least it creates
it. I think that you've conceded already that the TJAG did not have the authority to appoint Mr. Swoeckle in this case, correct?
That is correct. And
so if the TJAG didn't have authority under Article 66, and Article 66 talks only about the TJAG, how does it help you with respect to the appointment authority of the Secretary of Defense?
Merely the fact that the court and the job exists. It doesn't help me in terms of TJ can't do the appointment, but it does set up
that there is a Court of Criminal Appeals,
and that civilian judges can serve on them. And
you're not arguing. I mean, the power to appoint is distinct from the power to create. You're not arguing that
the power to appoint and the power to create can be separate. Congress can do them at the same time, or we.
But you're not arguing they did it at the same time in Article 66.
No, Your Honor.
But Congress can't appoint an officer.
No.
No. So they can create the job.
Yes.
But that's presidential prerogative under Article 2.
They can create the job, and since it's an inferior officer pursuant to statute, and we can see where an inferior officer can be appointed. I just wanted to get to one thing as I run out of time here. Based upon some of the discussion of officer and employee, in terms of 5 U.S.C. 2104, that I think is important to distinguish. In 2105, it talks about an employee, it means an officer, and it means anyone else is appointed. An interesting thing is, in terms of Title V, appointment really is anybody. It's not just the appointments clause. People under 2101 are appointed to civil service, even if they are just maintenance workers. However, when you get into 2104 definition of officer, it's a smaller circle within that employee circle. And it defines all the different people and how they're appointed. And once again, if you look at the different sections of the circles that are within, another circle within is an individual who's appointed by the head of an executive agency. It's just a smaller circle. It's not a expansion of appointment authority or creating a situation.
Well, how do you explain the fact that it tracks the Constitution and then it goes off on the Secretary's military departments?
Well, it tracks with the Constitution, well, in two regards. Number one, officer has application throughout the Title V. And also...
Are you saying it's not a... Title V doesn't define constitutional officers. It defines civil service officers, OPM officers.
It talks about... And some of those people are constitutional.
Some of them are, but some of them, by definition, must not be because the heads of military departments aren't heads of departments.
That is correct.
Okay. So if it's not a constitutional officer, then why are we talking about it?
Well, we're talking about it because they included the smaller circle in there. So if through 3101, you can employ employees, and employees take into account both the bigger officer circle and the smaller officer circle, then by necessity, Congress has approved the appointment of all of the individuals, ergo all employees.
Would you like to briefly summarize if there are no further questions?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. Excuse me. Through the creation of Uniform Code of Military Justice, Article 66 permits the utilization of civilian military judges. Further, pursuant to the broad authority granted by Congress to the Secretary of Defense through Titles 5 and 10 of the U.S. Code, Judge Swoeckle was appointed by the Secretary to serve as a civilian judge. Therefore, the United States respectfully requests this honorable court hold that Judge Swoeckle was properly appointed and affirm appellant's conviction and sentence. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the appellant, is there a rebuttal?
There are no further questions from the court. Appellant will rest on our original brief and reply brief, and I'll briefly summarize.
There are no further questions from the court. Oh, you're going to briefly summarize?
Thank you, Your Honor. The government is attempting to, it appears, shoestring three different statutes, 5 U.S.C. 3101, 5 U.S.C. 301, and 10 U.S.C. 113, that have very broad generic language, and put those together and say that that grants a poison clause power. That is not consistent with this court's rulings, with the Supreme Court, or the United States Constitution. A ruling in the government's favor today, the court should consider how broad would you be expanding the appointments clause if these generic and broad statutes that don't even use the word appointment or officers grant that authority. Accordingly, this court should find, should overrule the Air Force Court. Mr. Slovo was not properly appointed. This case should be returned to the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals to be reviewed by a properly appointed panel. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The court thanks both counsel, and the case is now submitted, and we stand in recess until further order of the court. Thank you.
All right. Court stands adjourned until further order of the court.